ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Introducing your host from New York, here is Sam Roberts.
Welcome to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Wednesday, you know how we do it. If you don't already, subscribe on iTunes or any of the other methods with which you can subscribe to a podcast. But if you can, do it on iTunes because it's better for me. Subscribe on iTunes. Make sure you're leaving positive reviews for the podcast. Leave a review every week. Get your friends. Tell your kids. Tell your wife. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. Mark some stars on it. Whatever you have to do, just be active in your enthusiasm for Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. I was so happy. Last week, Tony Hinchcliffe was a guest on the podcast. And I know, and I understand when a lot of you guys get a little bent out of shape when I don't have a name that you necessarily recognize as a guest on the podcast. You'd rather have a household name WWE superstar than some celebrity or some guy you've never heard of. But I got a lot of feedback last week about how much of you just enjoyed the pro wrestling conversation that I had with Tony Hinchcliffe. So if you haven't heard that podcast, make sure you go back and listen to it. So much to talk about this week. So much. And by the way, this is a big deal. Cameo by Joe Rogan on last week's show. If you didn't listen to the entire Tony Hinchcliffe interview, go back and listen to it. Cameo from podcasting legend, icon in the world of podcasting, as far as I'm concerned, Joe Rogan on last week's podcast. That's big. Nobody else has that on. Find Joe Rogan on any other wrestling podcast. I dare you. Find him. It's not going to happen. Speaking of not happening on any other wrestling podcast, my guest this week, doing his very first podcast, I wanted to talk to him for literally 2 years. 2 years ago, I was in Los Angeles, California. I was laying in bed. I was in a hotel room. Never lived there. But he's in my hotel bed, and I woke up, and I said to myself, all right, what do I got on the table for today? It's a big day. It's 2013, a big day of SummerSlam media. I got a red carpet event tonight. I don't know who I'm going to get to talk to. Hopefully I'll see some familiar faces. I'll run into Randy Orton, Big Show, CM Punk. Who knows? Who knows who's going to be there? I don't know. I don't really have an agenda. Let me pick up my phone and see what news broke overnight. Scroll through. First WWE active roster superstar comes out of the closet. What? Darren Young from the Primetime Players has come out of the closet. I immediately, 2 years ago, started emailing my PR friends at WWE, public relations that is, and said, I got to talk to Darren Young. I got to find out the story about this guy. This guy just came out of the closet. Darren Young saw a TMZ camera person at LAX flying into SummerSlam, asked him a question about gay athletes, and Darren Young decided to tell him that he himself was a homosexual. Never before happened in the history of sports entertainment. Big, big deal. I want to talk to this guy. He's not doing press. I understand. It's a lot for a person to deal with. It's a lot for a person to put themselves out there on that level. But I did, if you go back to some of those interviews I did 2 years ago, I talked to Randy Orton and Big Show and Titus O'Neil, and I talked to Punk that day. I talked to tons of people, but I talked to a lot of them about Darren Young coming out of the closet, and they all supported him, and they sounded genuine in their support. Finally, 2 years later, our paths have crossed, and Darren Young decided. He said, I've never done a podcast before. I want to be able to tell my story. That's what's so great about doing these podcasts is it's not just a quick hit. It's not a quote for a magazine. It's not 5 minutes on a local morning news show. It's not a radio show that has to get back to the music or the commercial. You can sit down with these guys and just talk and give people an opportunity to really tell their stories. Darren Young is an interesting guy, not just because he's the first openly gay wrestler, active, competing pro wrestler in the history of WWE and professional wrestling. It's because of everything he's been through. Let's keep in mind, Darren Young was a product of the WWE developmental system before it became NXT. He was a part of the original NXT TV show where his coach was CM Punk, his on-camera coach, of course. He was a part of the original Nexus group, that takeover group that came in and created a major, major stir in WWE and went on to be part of the Primetime Players, one of the more popular tag teams in the past few years, and one of the few tag teams that have managed to kind of maintain some semblance of relevancy for years now, which is not something a lot of people can do. But on top of all that, he is the first openly gay wrestler on the active WWE roster. So I had the opportunity to sit down with Darren Young, Darren's first podcast ever, to get him to tell his entire story. I got a lot to do today on the podcast. After this interview, I want to talk about everything that happened on Raw last night, a lot happening in WWE right now, and for those of you who have SiriusXM, this Friday, if you download the podcast on time, this Friday is going to be a very, very big live show on SiriusXM involving WWE and maybe NXT. I'll get to that in the State of Wrestling after we hear Darren Young's very first podcast, of course, here on Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast.
And now, the Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast interview.
First time in studio, we welcome Darren Young. Darren, what's the haps?
What's going on? I'm very, very, very excited to be here today. It's my first podcast. And I've always wanted to do your podcast, and I have some free time, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, you're Mr. No Days Off. You're a busy dude.
No days off. I live it in the ring, and I live it in life in general.
Did you come up with that nickname?
Actually, a friend of mine, Trouble, back in Yonkers, New York, I call him Trouble, he gave me that nickname, and it just stuck.
Is that just the type of guy you are?
Yeah, I'm always hustling. I'm always grinding. When I'm home, I get my laundry done. I get my bags packed because you never know when you're going to get that call. You might have to fly out earlier than expected.
So you always have a bag ready to go?
Ready to go, because you never know. You could get a call. 45 minutes, you got a flight, you got to be out. So I'm always ready. I stay ready, so I ain't got to get ready.
You ever want a day off? Like, do you ever think that I'd really like to just relax today?
Well, to be honest, Wednesdays are my off days because that's when a lot of us get home to our family and friends.
Yeah.
So I just splurge on sushi and people watch on Ocean Drive in Miami. And
so Mr. No Days Off, except Wednesday.
Wednesdays
is the day off.
Is me time.
Yeah, totally. But you stay busy.
Oh, always stay busy.
That's the point.
Always.
How did you grow up a wrestling fan?
Always, since a kid. My dad got me into wrestling, and I actually have a scar on my chin. You can't see it with my facial hair. My dad would always roughhouse me and, body slam me, and he cut my chin open, and my mom let him have it.
How did he cut your chin open?
I think I hit it maybe on the end of a bed or something like that, but I was just hooked. Just hooked to the program.
You always have those moments. My sister was dating a guy once who was a huge wrestling fan when I was young, and he gave me a razor's edge onto my bed, and the whole frame just snapped. And you just watch this dude panic because he was worried about my dad finding out that the whole bed frame was broken, and we had to prop the whole thing up with books.
Oh, but you fixed it?
Yeah, we fixed it. I mean, temporarily and eventually.
Did he find out about it?
Yeah, he did.
Oh.
And he was like, yeah, I took a razor's edge through the bed. Like, it happens sometimes.
That's crazy. Did you backyard wrestle ever?
I didn't. I wanted to start a backyard wrestling group, but my parents, I was like, here's what we'll do. I was always like, I wasn't a tough kid. Believe it or not, I wasn't always this physical specimen in front of you. But I wanted to start, start a backyard group and just get all my friends and do stories and stuff like that. But my parents reminded me that if anybody got hurt in our backyard, they'd be the ones going to court. So it was absolutely not going to happen. I had an idea for it. I never did it, though.
Yeah, well, you don't need to wrestle. You can talk the talk, man.
Right.
People into the backyard.
That's what I was going to do. But then I didn't have a backyard I could do it in. Were you a backyard guy?
Oh, yeah. I was a maniac. I was doing it up until senior year of high school.
Wow.
Yeah, I was a fanatic.
And were you doing the hardcore stuff?
No, my friends did that, but I was smart enough to know not to do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because most of the time, because that's what it was then. I mean, we grew up around the same time. So it was like, that was when ECW was hot.
Yeah.
And backyard wrestling was mainly because I guess, were you a good athlete in high school?
I was a decent athlete. I wasn't the best. I did football and I did amateur wrestling to stay off the streets, you know?
Right.
And I did wrestling to lose weight because I was a heavy kid growing up.
You were? So,
yeah, I was like 280, 285 on the
wow.
football field. And then I would wrestle in high school because we would train in those heated rooms. And I'd go from 285 to like 250 by the end of the season.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess with the backyard thing, you'd end up with a lot of guys who weren't in shape and who were not athletes, and that's why everybody was doing the hardcore stuff, because they just figured they could hit each other with 2x4s and barbed wire.
I didn't do any of that stuff, but it's funny because I took it very seriously. I had a fanny pack I would wear
of
to
course.
My friend's house. I'd have a roller bag. I'd have the big WCW title,
the replica belt.
Yeah, because I was a champ.
Right.
I always put myself over.
And yet you're like, you know, if you're going to be a superstar, you got to look like a superstar.
Exactly.
So you were living that life before you were even involved.
Exactly. I don't know. I just knew what it was supposed to be like. You know.
You were a big enough wrestling fan that you knew that on the road wrestlers wore fanny packs?
I just seen them from pictures, you know, I just thought it was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
Coolest thing. Michael Hayes still wears a fanny pack. I love it.
That's how weird life as a wrestling fan is, and how wrestling can just like manipulate fans that like we grow up. We're the only people in the world that grow up thinking fanny packs are cool. Nobody thinks fanny packs are cool, but
to be honest, I like them. They're very convenient.
They're
convenient. Don't wear them.
Yeah, but they look silly. But we idolize these wrestlers that are all wearing fanny packs, so we're going like, yeah, that's cool.
It was always fanny packs, cowboy boots.
Yeah.
And when I got signed in WWE.
And Zubas.
The Zubas. No, I've never. I've had a pair. I never wore them, but the cowboy boots, you know, I always like cowboy boots because of Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Ron Simmons, they all wore them.
And so you wore them?
Yeah.
Did you wear them in high school?
No, I didn't wear them in high school. When I got signed to WWE, that was like one of the first gifts I got myself, or two pair of cowboy boots.
You were like, if I'm going to be a WWE superstar, I got to dress like one in 1995.
Exactly. I don't wear them anymore. They hurt my feet.
Yeah. How long did you wear them for?
Briefly.
Did you get made fun of?
No.
People were just like, that's his thing.
No, I just wore them to look cool.
So you went from backyard wrestling to indie wrestling. Did you just this is logically the next step? Did you think to yourself, how am I going to make a career out of this?
To start off, I used scholarship money from college, $2,000, to join a wrestling school, IWF, in 2002.
Who was the scholarship money from?
Scholarship money was just from high school.
They were like, here, you know, you're a great student. We think you could do great things.
Yeah.
Put this towards a college education.
And I used that to join the wrestling school. I paid up front because it was something I wanted to do.
What'd your parents think of it?
They didn't know till probably a little over a year that I was doing it. I was in school, and then at night I would go over to the wrestling school and be the first one there, last one out. I was just obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Very obsessed with it.
You were no days off even then?
No days off.
So how long did it take you? Did you give up backyard at that point when you were training?
No, I wasn't doing that anymore. I was in West Paterson, New Jersey, training 4 days a week, getting those reps in. And then eventually I branched out after about a year and a half. Doing the Northeast area, and I was what they call like a weekend warrior.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, working a job during the week, and then on the weekends I'd be wrestling.
What were you doing during the week?
During the week, I actually ran an ice cream store. One of my friends owned an ice cream store, and I was the manager, and it was a Dairy Queen. And I did that because it was flexible. I could make my own hours. So I was in charge of kids and making a schedule. So when Dr. Tom Clinic came up, I'd say, hey, Mike, I need time off.
It was always just, I need something that'll pay the bills in the short term because this is what I'm doing.
Yes, I was determined like no other.
Was there any point where you were like, I don't know if this is going
to
work?
Yeah. There came a point where I wanted to give up many times, but Dr. Tom always assured me that, you know, to keep at it. And it was May 9th, 2009. I paid a tryout, $1,000 to attend in Tampa. And I beat out 75 guys and girls from all over the world.
Wow.
And AJ Lee was also signed that day, too.
So you and AJ got signed from that training. And that's one of those things that's a real leap of faith, too. Because I guess if it's a WWE sanctioned thing, it's a little different. But in the wrestling business, there's always somebody that wants to charge you $1,000 to train with this person, and you realize it's just a scam.
Yes.
Most of the time, it's just a scam. Before you got that opportunity, Did you fall into scams like that?
Oh, no, no, because, you know, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I have common sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I picked my clinics wisely. I always did Dr. Tom clinics because he was a great teacher, and I always put him over in interviews because he was the guy that originally got me hired, along with many other great superstars that are with us today.
Yeah, so he was your dude, and you were like, this is a guy. It's good when you can find somebody like that. That you're like, I trust this dude. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna, you know, train under him and just do his clinics. And also, he's associated with WWE, so you know, there's a means to an end there.
Yeah, he has a great mind for the business, and like they always say, those that can't teach, and he's a great teacher.
How long were you in developmental before you signed? Before you popped up on the NXT TV show? Before it was.
It was quick. It was quick. But if I can backtrack, my last independent match was against Viscera. And after our match, he said, "Boy, you're really good. You're going to be up on the road in 6 months, guarantee it," because I had just got signed. And I said, "Oh, I really appreciate the advice, and I'll definitely be in contact with you, and, you know, if it does happen." And I started doing NXT, and within 8 to 10 months, I started NXT, so Big Daddy V was right, and I thanked him. I called him up. I said, "Big Daddy, man, I'm on the road, and I miss him. I really do. He was a great guy, and I had a great match with him, and he was right."
That's pretty. Was that reassuring at that time when you were like, "Whoa!" Like, he didn't have to come to you and say that you were good.
No. I'm a quiet guy. A quiet guy, and I stay to myself. But for him to say that to me, it really meant a lot.
So, being a quiet guy, what was it like being on the NXT TV show? Because everybody that I've talked to, I talked to The Miz about it a couple of weeks ago. He was saying that there was just no format to any of it. It was sort of just throwing you guys out there, seeing what stuck, a lot of improv, a lot of just, here's a microphone, what are you going to do when you're on live TV? How did you adapt to that?
To be honest with you, I hated the concept.
You did?
Because I felt like I was on American Gladiator or what's that show?
American Ninja Warrior?
Yeah.
Because of all the stunts and stuff that you guys had to do.
And that's not me, you know. My stuff, I do my dirty work in the ring. And I told the guys, I said, if I wanted to be on American Gladiators, I would have done that. I mean, this obstacle and running and making fools of yourselves, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
NXT Today, that's where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, NXT Today is like the coolest show on TV. But
it's off the hook.
It's nothing like the NXT show that you were on. It's not. It's a totally different thing.
I'm guessing Tough Enough is probably going to be like that. Give them that, you know. Give them those embarrassing moments. See
right.
how they bounce back from that.
Right. Now, looking back on that, do you value that you kind of were thrown into embarrassing situations week after week? Or do you still think it was not necessary?
Both. It wasn't necessary, but I value every experience that I've had with WWE, mm-hmm. good or bad. You know, there's no such thing as an honest opinion in our business. But I feel like I had a great time with Wade, Ryback, Skip Sheffield at the time. I had a lot of fun with these guys.
What do you mean? There's no such thing as an honest opinion.
You know, everyone has their own opinions about, you know, I love the show. Oh, the show sucked, you know? I just felt that I made the best opportunity I could with it.
And what was it like working with Punk at that time? Because CM Punk was your trainer on the show anyway.
Yeah, Punk, him and I had like a love-hate relationship, you know? Like, he was a little rough around the edges. But, mm-hmm. you know, to be honest with you, one thing about Punk is if I could talk about him just for a second.
Yeah.
When he had his match with Brock Lesnar 2013, that was a couple of days before I made my announcement with TMZ.
Yeah.
After his brutal match with Brock Lesnar, he was all iced up, and I hadn't seen him since I made my announcement. So he came up to me in catering, and he told me to stand up, you know, in front of people. I stood up. He gave me a hug, and he said, "I'm proud of you. If you ever have any problems with anyone in the locker room, you let me know. And I got your back," and that meant the most to me. And in every interview I do, I always tell people that. And that meant the most to me. Randy Orton, Big Show, they all embraced me with love. And that's something that I'll always cherish and never forget.
And that's something, too, that's important, because guys like Punk and guys like Orton, like, those are guys that people know have a reputation for not necessarily being the nicest dudes mm-hmm. in the locker room. So for them to go out of their way and just saying, "Hey,
good on you. I got your back.
Yeah. And it was genuine.
Yeah.
It was very genuine, and I thanked them for that.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you were doing the NXT show, you guys didn't really have a huge relationship?
No, like storyline purposes, you know, he wanted me to live that straight edge lifestyle. And
right.
at the time, I was doing a South Beach party boy gimmick.
Which is an interesting gimmick for a quiet dude.
Yeah, yeah. I'm opposite. But when that red light's on, I know how to turn up.
Right.
That's one thing about me. And I think some of the best actors, you know, they kind of stay to themselves and they're unique in their own way. But when that red light's on, they just personality pop. Just oozes out.
Yeah. What did you think of the Nexus angle that came off that NXT show that you were a part of? Was in the beginning one of the first things at that point, probably in years, that kind of made everybody go, whoa, what's happening here? I would have to imagine after that first night when the Nexus showed up on Raw and destroyed the set and, you know, beat up Punk and beat up Cena and beat up the announcers and did everything, like you had to be feeling like $1 million.
I was nervous. All the guys were nervous because we needed to deliver that night. That was a
big
night for us. We didn't know how big it was going to be until we trashed the place.
Yeah.
We went on to wreak havoc on Bret Hart, Vince McMahon. It was something different. It was something, you know, new. These new guys, these new upstarts just trying to take over the locker room.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it ended so soon, in my opinion. I think we could have done a lot more with it, but hey, that's how the business is. Everything's changing from day to day.
What was the first thing that was kind of a red flag that this may not reach its potential? Was it right in the beginning? Like when Daniel Bryan got fired after that first night, that had to kind of give you pause for a second. Like what?
Yeah, I was shocked.
Yeah.
I was shocked, but we have rules and choking people. We can't condone that. We're a PG product and he got fired, but John Cena went to bat to bring him back, and he was brought back at SummerSlam. And
it was John Cena going to bat for him. Was that a storyline thing? Or are you saying in real life, John Cena said, no, this guy should?
I think storyline purpose.
Yeah.
And the fans, too. The fans wanted him back. They thought it was bogus.
Right.
You know, they told us they wanted us to wreck stuff and just take over, and that's what we did.
That was the intention, yeah.
Yeah.
So at what point did you realize, this may not reach the potential?
Well, I felt we should have won the SummerSlam match. I really felt, because that would have really, solidified us as a dominant group that, you know, eventually is going to move on to bigger and better things, but winning that match at SummerSlam, should have happened for the Nexus.
As a guy who grew up a wrestling fan, were you looking at that being like, this is our NWO. I get to be a part of this thing that's like the next NWO.
Yeah, we tried to be similar but different.
Yeah. You know?
We're all young upstarts, and we wanted to make a statement the best way we could.
Yeah.
And I had a ton of fun doing it,
And, I mean, and you look around, and the guys that came off that, it kind of speaks for itself how much talent was in that first class.
Yes, yes. Wade. Wade's a great guy. He's great on the mic. He's a great human being. Heath Slater's my homeboy.
Yeah.
Sometimes we travel together. Daniel Bryan hasn't changed. He's a great guy. I've known him from the independents for some time, and he's still the same guy.
What's it like for you when you realize that's the class that you're going in with, and you're looking around at all these guys, and you can see, like, these are all next-level performers that you're with? Does that make you perform better? Does it intimidate you to be like, oh, you know, I don't know if I'm as good as these guys?
You know, I try to see the best in everyone. And
yeah.
I think everyone has a spot on the roster. There's only so many spots to be filled on the roster. And I think everyone is unique enough to fill that spot confidently. I feel being a tag team wrestler, a tag team specialist with Titus O'Neil, I think that fits me. You know, Daniel Bryan, that fits him. So everyone is unique in their own way.
And what was it like trying to figure out that point? Because I think you're right. I think when you started doing the primetime players, that was kind of the first thing that really clicked, that was yours, that people got behind, that was working. Getting to that point, is that kind of a scary thing before you're there? So Nexus is over, primetime players hasn't started yet, and you're just trying to figure out what Darren Young is.
Yeah.
Is that a scary time?
Yeah, it was a scary time for me. I was wrestling on Superstars, which I have no problem doing as long as I'm out there in the ring.
Yeah.
But there was a point where I was like, man, kind of lost. I need some guidance.
Yeah.
And that's when Vince McMahon put Titus and I together because he saw how we interacted backstage. Titus and I are like brothers. We're with each other more than we are with our families. So he's seen that chemistry. So that's how the Primetime Players got started.
That's so interesting. So you're just hanging out with this dude, and Vince McMahon catches wind of the fact that you guys are entertaining each other.
Yes.
In a locker room.
Yes.
And he goes, let's try to put this on TV.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
And then how much freedom do you have then going forward? Does he say, okay, well, these guys, you know, I want what was in the locker room, do it out there? Or is it sort of a lot more tightly scripted and okay, now we're going to take this and change it into that?
The first time around, things were kind of scripted, and Titus and I like to work off bullet points, but our natural charisma comes out just, you know, by interacting with each other. When we're given bullet points about a story, we just, you know, we make the best out of it, and we make it our own. We try to be entertaining. We try to put over how we're the roughest, toughest, most entertaining tag team in WWE, and we just try to entertain because our job as superstars ultimately is to put smiles on people's faces.
Yeah. So whose idea was the Millions of Dollars dance?
That came about one time we were driving. I was driving. I do most of the driving, and Titus was in the passenger, and we were driving. I was driving like a maniac, and I almost flipped the car over, but luckily we were okay.
Yeah.
And then he said, damn, don't you know you got millions of dollars in this car? And I just started busting out laughing. So that's how it came about. Damn, man, don't you know you got millions of dollars in this car? And that's how it started.
You're like, we're just going to drop it on TV.
What's that?
You're just like, we're just going to drop that on TV.
Yeah, and just combine it with the dance. And the dance came about. You know, we got a big victory over, I think, Ezekiel Jackson and Yoshitatsu. And we got the victory, and we came together, started dancing and flowing back and forth. And that's just how it happened.
What you were feeling.
A lot of things that we do, it happens by accident, and it works.
Did you like you kind of made a physical transformation? We were talking about your like party boy gimmick.
Oh god,
where you had the straightened hair and it was put up and the big gold chain and everything, and then you kind of went in a complete different direction. Were you really ready to drop the party boy stuff, or was that something that you weren't sure? Because the one thing you can say is when you had your hair sticking up in the air and the gold rope around your neck and everything, it was at least something that you knew people were going to recognize every time. Nobody else was looking like that.
Yeah, yeah.
For better or worse.
Yeah, exactly. I looked different. People said I looked like a troll and whatnot. But that all started in FCW. It was Dusty's idea of me and Percy Watson at the time developing a tag team called the South Beach Party Boys, Fly, Flashy, and Fabulous, we were calling ourselves. And eventually I brought that to NXT because I was part of the first season of NXT.
You're right.
And it worked for a little bit, but again, I just wasn't feeling it. The hair, I was a little self-conscious about the hair.
You were?
Yeah, because, you know, I looked like a troll, and it was actually a mistake, my hair. You know, I got it messed up, so I had to redo it. It's a long story. I don't want to talk about my hair.
That's one of those things that, like, people start insulting you about on Twitter, and you're like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I like the way I look now. I look like a man.
Yeah.
But,
That's so always a mistake, though. the whole incarnation of it was like, I don't have time to fix it. I got to make it work somehow.
Exactly. I tried to fix it, and I just wasn't feeling it. So.
And then once you show up with it on TV, once you show up looking like that, it's not like you could just, all right, I'll change it for next week.
Yeah.
Because now that's your look.
Yeah. It's similar like Dwayne, you know, when Dwayne first made his debut as Rocky Maivia, he had that Chia Pet hair. And
yeah.
Getting on him about that. That's how I felt.
Right, and you can watch it. You could, after your first match, be like, yeah, they're right. I better change that, but I can't.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't change it until there's, like, a gimmick change or something.
Exactly, exactly. It's funny because I used to rock the spiky hair, and Sheamus would always just, like, look at my hair. He wouldn't look me in the eyes. He'd just look at my hair. Look at my hair. Like, and the look that he was giving me was like, you gonna cut that kid? You gonna cut that fella?
So which is funny because Sheamus has, like, the most ridiculous haircut on the roster right now.
Hey, it is what it is, you know. He looks different.
It's working.
That's what it's all about.
Braids in his beards and everything.
Yeah, he's a tough joker, that's for sure.
Yeah. So when so let's go to 2013 then, when you're talking about your announcement. When you came out with TMZ, how did you know in your mind, I'm going to do this in the next chance I get? Did you know TMZ was going to be at the airport and say, I'm going to try to catch them and just do this and just get it out there in the open?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been approached by TMZ plenty of times, and they're cool people. And I was at LAX, the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, SummerSlam.
I remember, yeah, because I was doing interviews out there.
Yeah.
And it was literally, I woke up the day of a media day where I was interviewing a whole bunch of guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this is the press release coming out. And I go, whoa. And so I immediately, I'm texting Joe, like, is Darren around? Is he doing interviews? Yeah. And Joe's like, well, he's gonna be cool for now. You know, he just kind of made a big announcement. But the supportive thing that you were talking about was, you know, there was a red carpet event or something that night. And so that was kind of the question. I was asking, you know, all the guys, you know, what do you think of this? And everybody was like, it's really not a big.
You talked to Randy Orton about it. Talked
to Orton.
Big Show.
Yeah, and Titus.
And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Those guys, those three guys supported me 110%. And I love them to death. I really do.
But so what at that point made you say, okay, now is the time to just get this off my chest?
Well, I felt like it was the right place, right time. I said what I said. I walked away confidently. And
did you know it was a huge deal when you said it?
Oh, no. When I said it, I was confident. And then when I walked away, I said to myself, holy shit, what the hell did I just say? And I went back to my hotel room, and I was sick as a dog. I was throwing up. I was saying to myself, what the hell did I just do? I mean, and stuff's going through my head. Like, I'm going to get fired, you know? What kind of backlash am I going to get? So I locked myself in my room. I called my best friend Trouble, and I said, what should I do? What should I do? He said, contact someone from WWE. So I contact someone from WWE.
So WWE had no idea you were going to do this?
No idea.
That's terrifying for you.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. So I called someone from WWE, and they assured me everything was going to be okay. And the next day, I had to do a Be a Star. My first Be a Star anti-bullying program, and I told Stephanie McMahon, I said, I can't do this. I can't go out there. I'm nervous. TMZ, media, paparazzi out there. I was sick as a dog, but
yeah.
She assured me that everything was going to be okay and that I would do great, and I did, and it was the best decision I did by doing the anti-bullying rally.
Well, it was kind of, and it's kind of perfect timing, too, for that to be your one place that you're doing anything public is an anti-bullying thing, you know, a day after you come out. It's kind of perfect.
Yes, yes.
You know, that's kind of the spot to do it. Were you surprised? Was there any backlash from anybody, really? It didn't seem like there was.
No backlash. You get little stuff on Twitter, but my whole thing is if they don't know you personally, don't take it personal.
Yeah.
So stuff on Twitter, I play it like a game. I just block them, and I'm done with it.
Yeah.
You know? So if you don't have the balls to say it to my face, then, you know, you're a coward.
And you don't get people. I would imagine nobody has come up to you to your face and said anything negative.
No.
That's how you know that, like, it's nonsense.
Yeah, it's probably some 500-pound person, you know, sitting at home, you know, self-conscious about themselves. You know, I don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I really don't.
How known was it that you were gay in the locker room? Did WWE know you were gay?
No, no one knew.
Even the locker room didn't know?
Zero.
Wow.
Zero. Because I was very fearful.
Yeah.
Extremely fearful.
Well, yeah, I mean, in any athlete, I mean, anytime anyone comes out anywhere near associated with professional athletics, it's a major news story because it doesn't exist publicly. I mean, I'm sure it exists a lot more than anybody realizes, but it doesn't exist publicly. So, yeah, I would imagine that.
Yeah, and like that morning when the news broke, I knew they were going to cover it. I just knew it. I knew they were going to cover it.
Of course, yeah.
I look on the news and I see at the bottom of the screen on one of the news stations, WWE superstar Darren Young comes out openly gay. I said to myself, oh, crap, this is a big freaking deal.
Well, yeah, you didn't realize at the time you're making history. Like, there's never been an active WWE superstar who's openly gay.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, yeah. And now now everyone knows the cat's out the bag about me. Now it's my fight is done in the ring. I'm fighting for people with disabilities. I had a speech impediment growing up. I was a heavy kid growing up. I'm fighting for people in the ring every time I go out there that are not comfortable with being themselves. You know, I was there. I was there. So every time I step through those ropes, I'm fighting for everyone that has disabilities and, you know.
So how tough was it for you to know, to have that inside you and to not only know that nobody knows it, but to be afraid of people knowing that?
I was fearful. I was It was fear of the unknown.
And you just lived kind of in fear for all these years.
For 30 years. And I said, wow. I just couldn't do it anymore, you know. And my close family and friends knew about it two, 3 years ago because, you know.
It's only that recently that you came out to even your family and friends.
Yeah, I made my announcement with TMZ in 2013, I believe. But 2 years before that, I came out to my family and friends.
Huh.
Close, you know. My circle's small, so yeah. I needed that support system.
Did your family and friends kind of be like, yeah, we kind of suspected that, or were they taken aback by it?
They weren't. Neither one. They were just 100% behind me.
That's great.
And that's what I needed.
Yeah.
That's what I needed. And I stress that with a lot of people that I meet at my speaking engagements. You know, you got to have that inner circle, big or small.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize... I could absolutely understand where the fear would lie, but like my brother came out when he was in high school and like he was saying that he was terrified of everybody finding out. And then once everybody found out, it was like, yeah, okay.
You realize
all good. Like,
you realize
you know,
you have more support than you think.
Yeah.
You realize that. I realize that.
And the people who wouldn't support you, you probably wouldn't have them in your life anyway for other reasons. They're not good people.
Bingo.
You know,
Bingo.
It's not, were you worried that, did you know that you had to, part of the reason that you had to come out publicly was because you didn't want people to find out another way? Like you didn't want them to see you with your boyfriend somewhere and blog about it or something? Was that part of the thing?
Well, I mean, now we're able to hold hands. We weren't able to do that. You know, whatever people have to say about it, the relationship between Nikki and I is real.
Yeah.
Know? And now that I've made my announcement, we're able to hold hands. We're able to be affectionate. We don't have to stand shoulder to shoulder. We can be ourselves just like any other couple.
How is that for Nikki when he is dating you and can't be public about his affection for you? Like you have to pretend you're just friends when you're out in public.
Well, it was rough.
Yeah.
You know, it was rough. I mean, I was still affectionate. But there were times when, you know, I'd see fans, come up to me and want an autograph. I'd sign the autograph, be nice to them, and they didn't know what to expect. So... it was rough, but I don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Thank God.
That's the way to be.
Huge weight off my shoulder.
It must feel like everything in life must be easier now. Like everything, just living day to day, I would imagine. You must see people that are stressed out and go, you have no idea.
You know, I always say the least I owe myself is to be truthful and honest with myself and be comfortable.
That's
for myself, not for anyone else. For me to feel comfortable is very important to me, and I owe it to myself.
Did you want this to be something that was incorporated into your character when you came back? Because you stepped away from the ring for a little bit, let the press die down a little bit, let it not be the story. But is it something that you wanted to be a part of your character, or do you want it to be a part of your character?
I feel I've done that recently on TV with Titus. We've had backstage segments, and I've made some cool little remarks about rainbow is my favorite color.
Right.
You know, so little stuff like that, I love, but let me be me on TV. Let me be who I am.
Yeah, I think the strongest thing about it is doing something like that where you acknowledge it, but you're not doing like a stereotype character. You're not making a cartoon out of it. You're kind of being a human being.
Exactly.
Which I think, you know, is something that we're just societally starting to do with people.
And I'm all for having fun with it. All for having fun with it. Vince McMahon always says, never be afraid to make a fool of yourself. And he'll do stuff on TV that, you know, is wacky and crazy, and he's not afraid to do it. You know, don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to fall on your face. You know, just get back up and dust yourself off. That's what he always says.
Do you see yourself going forward? Is your focus on being a main event superstar and doing everything in the ring, or is it more on being a spokesperson and telling your story and doing that?
I want to be a main event. I want to be a main event person in general, whether it's in the ring or whether it's being an LGBT advocate.
Yeah.
I'm going to currently be working with the Trevor Project. So my no days off monarchy is real to me.
Right.
So I want to be busy outside of the ring, inside of the ring. That's why I'm here at this podcast with you, because I had a little free time. I'm here for the GLAAD Awards Saturday at the Waldorf Astoria, And I said, well, since I'm here, let's see if I can link up with you to do this podcast.
Yeah, and we talked to a mutual friend who, I mean, for, you know, for months has been saying, yeah, you got to get Darren up. I'm like, yeah, I would have him up anytime. And finally, like, you had a day. It's like, he can do Friday. I'm like, let's do Friday then. Let's do it.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I'm very, very happy to be here.
How, speaking of being happy, how happy were you when you found out that they were putting the primetime players back together?
I was excited. PTP 2.0.
Yeah.
Titus was excited because he was kind of lost with the Slater Gator gimmick. But us coming together, it's we know each other better. We're more fluid. We're getting more promo time. And we're having fun. We really are. And we're trying to chase those tag team titles. We're working on it.
But. Yeah. And doing the gimmick where you're making fun of tag teams every week has got to be a blast.
Yeah, yeah. We're just having fun. Just having fun and being goofy.
I would have to imagine that not only now that you've had all the experience that you've had in the ring, but I would have to imagine that being open about your lifestyle, just literally taking that weight off your shoulder that's been a part of every aspect of your life, has to make you a better performer now.
It does. It does. In the ring and verbally, too.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes back in the day, I would say stuff in promos, and I would always question myself, oh, did that sound too feminine? Or
really?
Yeah, or did that sound masculine enough? So I don't have to worry about that anymore.
So you were, on some level, conscious of hiding your secret in every sort of aspect. That I think people wouldn't even think about the fact that you're walking through life cutting a promo, going, oh, that didn't sound like gay. Nobody's going to suspect anything after that. And it's like, it wasn't even in anybody's head.
Sam, it drove me crazy.
It's got to.
Insane.
It's got to.
Not anymore, though.
Yeah, because now you're like, wait, it doesn't matter. You come across now as you.
Yes.
Which you're perfectly happy with everybody knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a beautiful thing. It's kind of the way to live life, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, that's great, man. Is there anything, where can people find you on Twitter and all that?
My Twitter account is at Darren Young, WWE. I have Instagram. Okay, so let's slow it down. My Instagram name is Fred Darren, my real name and my gimmick name. Fred Darren, FREDARREN. That's my Instagram account.
And is that because that's kind of the cross-pollination of the character meets the actual person?
Yeah, if you want to call it that. Yeah. Am I going to write that down?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Where do you want to go? Like, where are your goals in terms of, I guess, in the business and wherever?
Well, I'm 31 now. Wikipedia, I hate Wikipedia, says I'm like 34 or 35. I try to get fixed, but pisses me off. But on the record, I'm 31.
Yeah, that's your secret now. Now he's coming out as a 31-year-old.
Yes, 31. And I see myself, as Mark Henry would say, I'm going to steal his line. I still got a lot left in the tank.
Yeah.
I still have a lot left to offer in the business. I have a great mind for the business. Like they say, those that can't teach, I just know the business, the camera angles, and how to get the best reaction, maximize your reaction in the less amount of time that you're given. So I can see myself coaching, teaching, but ultimately being an advocate for the LGBT community and any community that I could help.
Do you feel job security in a sense now, whereas when you first came out, you were very nervous? You'd be like, I think I might be fired for this. Now that everybody's come forward in support of you, now that you can be an advocate and you have this amazing story that people don't have, do you feel a sense of job security in the sense that, you know, I at least have to be around to tell this story?
I mean, I don't worry about that.
You don't.
I wake up every day. Every day is a new day for me. And like I always say, the message I drive home is I'm Mr. No Days Off, and that's who I am. I want to stay busy. I want to stay on the grind. I want to give back as much as I can, and I want to entertain, because sometimes you can lose it sometimes when you're in the ring. You know, you don't have that spark like you used to. I always have that spark every time I hit that curtain, you know. And I try to maximize all my opportunities that I'm given with WWE and outside of WWE.
Well, based on the fact that your arms are the size of my head, I would love for any of those Twitter people to try to say anything to your face. It would never happen. Never happen.
Thanks for hanging out, man. It was great to meet you finally and get this done.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
For sure, man, and good luck with everything.
You took care of me. Thank you.
Always.
Here is Sam Roberts.
Care of him. It's like I'm a wrestler. Darren Young, great guest. Great guest on Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. And it's so cool to be able to be his first podcast. And that's right, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Roberts staying on there, saying, stating for the record, I was Darren Young's first. That's it. Put the quote out there. Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast exclusive. I was Darren Young's first. Maybe that quote should go on a t-shirt. You know what I'm talking about, right? The t-shirts. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/Sam Roberts. That's prowrestlingtees.com/Sam Roberts. And get yourself a Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast shirt. A What's the Hap shirt. A Not Sam shirt. A Not Sam Mode shirt. Whatever suits your fancy, just go over to prowrestlingtees.com/Sam Roberts to get yourself one immediately. Just do it, okay? Let's get into the state of wrestling again. Thank you very much to Darren Young for being part of this thing today. It's time. Hit it, Finkel.
It's now time for this week's State of Wrestling.
Yeah, it is. State of Wrestling time. First of all, big time for NXT. They're on their very first, well, not their first, but their first major loop. Like, they're probably their biggest road trip. They're doing Philly for two nights this week, and then they're going to Albany and I think a couple other places. I don't know. They got like a 4 or 5 day stretch, which I think is crucial. I think when you're using NXT as a true developmental territory, meaning it is everything WWE is just on a smaller scale, they're doing a great job in terms of not only using it just for matches, but getting them in front of different audiences, getting them in front of different venues, figuring out the mechanics of how to play to the camera, of how to use facial expressions. Merchandising is now being done with t-shirts and video games and action figures. Media training is now being done with interviews with various, you know, media locations. It's a full one-stop shop to create a superstar so that whenever any of these guys get sent to the main roster, whether it be Adrian Neville, whether it be Sami Zayn, any of these guys are ready to make that leap. Now, speaking of being media trained, wait till you hear this. The reason that I bring this up is the Philly events specifically are very special for NXT because Philadelphia is one of, if not the best cities for pro wrestling, especially independent pro wrestling. So much of it going on, and there's so much wrestling history there. I said it after I went to the Royal Rumble that Philly may have the best wrestling fans on the planet. Maybe. Chicago's great. London's great. New York is good. Philly is really good, too, though. Philly is in the great category. And NXT is finally going to Philly. The WWE reached out, and they said, Sam, we want you down in the building when NXT is live in Philly. So here's what's going to happen. I hope that over WrestleMania weekend, a bunch of you signed up to SiriusXM. If you don't already have it, you would know if you did that Katie Linendahl and myself did a WrestleMania spectacular show. We were at WrestleMania Radio Row, and right there, day of, on premises, we had Daniel Bryan and Paul Heyman and Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt and Charlotte and all these people stopping by Sam Roberts' show on SiriusXM. It's not a wrestling show. It's a show about me. It's about everything I'm interested in. But wrestling is a big part of me, so wrestling ends up coming up. If you don't already have SiriusXM, you're going to want to get it by Friday because I will be doing my SiriusXM show live from Philadelphia before the NXT show in the building with NXT superstars coming through. I'm talking about Enzo Amore. I'm talking about Finn Balor. I'm talking about Sasha Banks. All the people that you guys have been dying. I'm talking about Kevin Owens. All the people that you guys have been dying to hear on this podcast are going to be a part of the live SiriusXM show this Friday. Get SiriusXM if you don't already have it. Go to SiriusXM.com. My show is on OP Radio. It's Sirius 206 XM 103. get it, subscribe, listen to my show every week. It's going to be on more than once a week very soon. And listen this Friday. Of course, the show will also be on demand, but you have to subscribe to SiriusXM to get access to all that. But you're going to want to hear my interviews with all of the NXT superstars this Friday, live from Philadelphia. Now, speaking of live, Monday Night Raw was live, and it was on fire. It was a good Raw. A lot happened on Raw. I mean, you got to start with the new Mega Powers, right? You thought I was going to say Daniel Bryan, didn't you? Maybe I'll get into Daniel Bryan, but I did not. When Damian Sandow came out as Macho Man, I was kind of scratching my head. I'm like, look, at this point, Damian Sandow can make anything work. There's no doubt about it. Damian Sandow has proven that whatever garbage you give him, he's going to polish up as nicely as anyone can, and he's going to get it over. He's like Dusty Rhodes with polka dots. Throw at me what you're going to throw at me. It's my job to go out there and get it over. That said, I'm kind of done with Damian Sandow impersonating things. I don't mind the new Mega Powers, Axelmania, and Macho Mandow. I don't like the name Macho Mandow. It's hard to say. But, you know, I honestly don't think Damian Sandow, even as Mizdow, I don't think Damian Sandow has ever been better than he was when he was the intellectual savior of the masses. When he came out in his bathrobe and his towel, when he held the microphone in that weird way with the top of his hand or his palm or whatever it was. I don't think Damian Sandow has ever been better than when he is just Damian Sandow, when he's wearing pink tights, when he's got the blue robe on, when he's acting like he's better than everybody else. I think that Damian Sandow still has a lot to give and is big money. You know, it's fun to see Damian Sandow dress up as various different characters, but as long as he's dressing up as different people, we don't get a clear picture of what Damian Sandow is. You know, The Miz was on this podcast a couple weeks ago saying that it's up to the fans now to maintain the level of overness that Damian Sandow has. That's the clinical term, the level of overness. But I think that it's also up to Damian Sandow, and it's up to how he's being packaged. And I don't think that dressing up as different characters, especially legends, especially since he's already done it, is any way to get the audience to find themselves connected to Sandow. And that's what every superstar that's ever gotten over, everyone that's ever been huge, whether it's Austin or The Rock or The Undertaker or Daniel Bryan or Hulk Hogan or John Cena or whoever, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, there's some level on which you connect with those guys. That's why they get cheered. You do not cheer or boo, quite frankly, anybody that you don't connect with on some level. There's a reason that you like or dislike them. And I don't think, the same way I don't think you can properly connect with a man who's got color contacts in, which is my Roman Reigns theory, I don't think you or I as audience members can properly connect with Damian Sandow as long as he's not Damian Sandow. Okay, he does impressions. Imagine if Jimmy Fallon. The reason Jimmy Fallon is so successful on The Tonight Show is not just because he's creative, is not just because he's funny, is not just because his team puts out amazing viral videos. The reason Jimmy Fallon is so successful as a late-night talk show host is because he's likable. He can do great impressions, but every show we spend time with Jimmy Fallon. We see Jimmy Fallon. Imagine if Jimmy Fallon was just doing impressions the entire time. You wouldn't be able to connect to this guy. Eventually, you get tired of watching him because you go, who is this guy? I'm going to turn on Jimmy Kimmel because every night I get an impression of who Jimmy Kimmel is. Damian Sandow has got to be someone. You know, even Axelmania, even, you know, he's kind of doing the Hulk Hogan gimmick, but he's still being Curtis Axel. He's being obnoxious. He's trying to get what he thinks he deserves. There is something to Curtis Axel that you're understanding why he's doing this. When you're just pretending to be another character, when you're doing a parody all the time, it's like, okay, you know, nobody can honestly say that Weird Al Yankovic is their favorite musician. You could say you like Weird Al. You could say Weird Al has done a lot of entertaining songs, but Weird Al is nobody's favorite musician. That's because we don't know Weird Al. He does parodies of everybody. I don't know what he sounds like. I know that he does a great job of writing parodies. I know he does a great job of performing parodies. I don't know what he actually does outside of making fun of what other people do. Damian Sandow needs to be Damian Sandow, even if you have to change it, because now he's a babyface. Then figure out how you change it. Figure out what it is. But the whole guy with an identity crisis has been done, and no matter how well you do it, you're not going to get there. It's not going to happen as a different character. You're not going to be in the main event with somebody else's gimmick, no matter how good the parody is. It's not going to happen. I think it's funny, the idea of Axelmania and Macho Mandow as a tag team doing the Mega Powers handshake and everything. I think that's creative, but it's temporary. It's short term, and you're dealing with somebody like Damian Sandow, who became super over because of the Miz thing. So now you have this opportunity, like the Miz was saying, to do something with him, to really spend some time with him. And it's not going to happen if he's pretending to be somebody else. Now he's finally done being Mizdow. Okay, this guy has been stuck being Miz's personal assistant for months. So now that he's finally loosened those shackles, he's out of the shadow, what does he do? He dresses up as somebody else. We got to figure out what this guy's identity is. We have to. Speaking of things that we have to do in order to make things work, the Bray Wyatt thing. Bray Wyatt, I've said it before, Bray Wyatt is my favorite wrestler on the WWE roster. I think he's the best. He's the best in-ring performer. He's the best on the microphone. Bray Wyatt is going to be around for a really long time, and he is really, really good. The Undertaker match at WrestleMania sold me. You watch that match. You watch what he does with his body, what he does with his face, the way he walks, the way he moves, the way his moves are performed. Everything is telling an amazing story. He is in the head of the character the whole time. The things that he's doing are so next level in terms of performing that it blows my mind. Now, he's in this feud with Ryback. I would imagine that this is just being set up because he's got to win some matches. Because he's been in all these high-profile feuds and lost. You know, it's done great for his exposure and turning him into a household name, but he's lost all these things. I'm assuming that he's just being put with Ryback because he needs to win. Here's what I would say. We need a reason to care that Bray Wyatt doesn't like Ryback. Right now, it just feels like the same thing he did with The Undertaker. The promos are entertaining. I'm definitely drawn in to what Bray Wyatt's saying, but I need a reason. And the reason's there. Okay, a couple of times, Ryback has gone out of his way to go into the ring, to grab a microphone, and to talk about The Secret, and to talk about positive thinking, and to talk about affirmations, and to talk about keeping a positive mindset. And all of this, which fits in perfectly, I think that that is the idea that we're kind of getting to, that Bray Wyatt is fighting against that. But I think you have to really make it a lot clearer than what's going on. I think you have to have Bray Wyatt battling against the idea of positive thinking. I think you have to have Bray Wyatt going out of his way to tell Ryback, no matter how many times you tell yourself that you're going to do great, you're not going to do great. No matter how many times you tell yourself that everything's going to be okay, it's not. No matter how many times you tell yourself that you can do it, you can't do it. That's the message that I feel like we should be getting from Bray Wyatt right now. That no matter how much you think that you can win, you can't win. You're wrong. You can say it to yourself as many times. I don't care how hard you believe that you are going to save yourself or any of these fans, it's not going to happen. That's the message that we can get from Bray Wyatt, and that's a reason for Bray Wyatt and Ryback to be in the ring together. Right now, I think we're a little fuzzed up, I'll say. There's some static in the air in terms of why these two are being paired up. But I think that is the reason. Now, we get to the big story. Well, there's a couple big stories. Let's get it real quick. I'm kind of digging this Elimination Chamber thing. It confuses a little bit. There's a lot going on right now, so it kind of confuses the Payback pay-per-view in the sense that now I'm thinking about the Elimination Chamber and forgetting that Payback is this Sunday. I do kind of worry that Payback is going to be a bit of a blow-off pay-per-view. I mean, I don't see Dean Ambrose leaving with the WWE Championship. I think there's no doubt that Seth Rollins leaves with that. And the Intercontinental title is not going to be decided till the Elimination Chamber. I think, you know, John Cena beats Rusev. I don't see a lot coming off of Payback. But the fact that, you know, a couple of weeks later, literally I think 2 weeks later, the Elimination Chamber is going to be a pay-per-view special exclusively on WWE Network is cool. To just announce, hey guys, in like 3 weeks we're going to have another pay-per-view that we did not announce. We just decided to do it because we have a network. That's why the network exists. And it's going to get subscribers. People are going to be interested in this thing. It has a very Tuesday in Texas feel to me. Tuesday in Texas is one of my favorite pay-per-views of all time. Not because it's very good, but because as a kid, you're watching Survivor Series 91. And Jack Tunney comes on, and he announces not only are Macho Man and Jake the Snake Roberts going to finally wrestle each other, but it's going to happen in like 5 days on another pay-per-view. You're flipping out. Now, as an adult, that's when you realize you have to buy another pay-per-view. As an adult, that's when you realize that the guys that you thought were going to be at this pay-per-view that you just paid for are going to be at the next one. You know, looking back, was it a little bait and switch? Maybe. But as a kid, I dug it. I didn't understand pay-per-views. I just was like, great. Another wrestling show? And Hulk and Macho Man and Jake the Snake are fighting? Perfect. Love Tuesday in Texas. Then The Undertaker turns to a good guy? I'm like, what? What? Oh, man. But I think that the Elimination Chamber is cool. I think it's a cool idea. I'm disappointed at what's on the line in the Elimination Chamber. The fact that the Intercontinental title is on the line. Look, I'm the biggest Daniel Bryan fan there is. I've been talking about him forever. All I wanted, I mean, I was at SummerSlam the year that he beat John Cena clean, and I was flipping out. I didn't mind that Randy Orton cashed in because it set up a nice feud, but then, you know, I was a little disappointed that it didn't carry over. It's hard to say. Daniel Bryan is Mr. WrestleMania moment, meaning he is great at telling a story. He's great. January to March, Daniel Bryan is on fire. Boy, is Daniel Bryan excellent at getting people all hyped up and getting people upset that he doesn't win Royal Rumbles. Nobody gets people more upset by not winning Royal Rumbles than Daniel Bryan does. And he gets people so upset that he ends up in a great spot at WrestleMania. He ends up winning his WrestleMania matches. He ends up having amazing WrestleMania moments. Whether it's this year, standing at the top of a ladder holding the Intercontinental title belt, or championship, I should say. Whether it was last year when he stole WrestleMania. When this guy, who wasn't supposed to be anything, ends up beating the CEO or the COO or whatever Triple H is, and then going on to defeating a movie star for the WWE Championship. And he has his moment. He had his moment again at 31. And you give him 2 months, and he's going to have to drop that belt in the ring. This is like Shawn Michaels from 96 2.0, maybe 95. And you can't blame a guy for getting injured. But what a bummer. What a bummer. I think it's gonna cost him. I think it's going to be difficult, if he comes back, for fans to get behind Daniel Bryan. I don't think he'll ever have the fanfare that he got going into WrestleMania 30. I don't even know if he'll return to the fanfare he got going into WrestleMania 31. Because it's one of those things where now you can't blame WWE. You can't sit there and blame WWE for not wanting to take a chance on Daniel Bryan when they've taken two chances. They've taken two big chances on Daniel Bryan, and both times it hasn't panned out. Injuries, maybe not his fault, whatever it is, it hasn't panned out. Fool me once, Shame on you. Fool me twice. Well, you can't fool me again. That's what I'm trying to say. That's a shame. I love Daniel Bryan. But you got to have consistency. You have to. I mean, it is impossible to get behind a guy who can't say it. Maybe the best work of his career was as world champion. And if anything, world champion, not WWE champion, when he was a heel and he had the buzz cut and he was working with AJ. Maybe that was the best Daniel Bryan has ever been. If anything, I think the Daniel Bryan story is a lesson to WWE to not, I was going to say don't look a gift horse in the mouth, but that's not quite appropriate. I think WWE needs to look at the Daniel Bryan story and realize that when you have the guy, don't wait. Wrestling is a weird business. Stuff like this happens all the time. When you have a guy who is organically white hot, you simply can't wait. You can't put the brakes. You can't say, all right, well, once we're done with Cena, all right, well, maybe we'll take a look then. All right, well, maybe we'll give him a triple threat. All right. When you look at your audience and there is a guy who is as over as Daniel Bryan, you cannot make people wait. In 2015, with as many injuries as there are, and everybody being much more sensitive to injuries, the fact is that the injuries that took out Daniel Bryan probably would not have taken him out 10 years ago. But we're smarter now. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. We're smarter now. As a society, we're smarter in terms of what we do with our athletes. And we're not going to let people kill themselves. We're not going to give people brain disease. We're not going to, you know, we're going to do everything we can to keep these guys safe and make sure that these WWE superstars live long lives. That said, if that's your goal now, if it's not just to use them up and spit them out, if your goal is to make sure that they live long lives and keep them out of the ring, if they have concussions, if they're injured, if what have you, then you cannot wait on these guys. You cannot let things build and build and build and build and build until it's a boiling point. Put the title on these guys immediately. When they start getting hot, let them get hot. Put the title on them. Put them in the main event. Acknowledge what's happening. Do it right away and get as much as you can out of them. Because the fact is that even if Daniel Bryan will never achieve the level, even if he never gets back to the level he was at a year ago, a year and a half ago, he could have been at that level for a lot longer. He could have been up at the top for a lot longer, but he was ignored for a long time because people didn't want to believe that he was as popular as he is, and he was. If anything, if we learn anything, if there's any takeaway from the Daniel Bryan story, who's now injured again and vacated the Intercontinental Championship, it's to say, and you know, and now it's going to be up on the line in that Elimination Chamber. If we can learn anything from Daniel Bryan's story, it's to not wait. And let it be a life lesson. Don't postpone joy. Do it now while you can. Do not wait on anything. When these WWE guys are at the top of their game, don't wait. Put the strap on them. Let them bring that green in. You know what I'm saying? I think you do. Listen. Thank you all for listening to this week's State of Wrestling. I got to go. There's a lot more to talk about, but I try to keep it to an hour or so. Sometimes we go a little over. Last week we went a little over. Big thanks to Darren Young. Remember, get yourself a t-shirt at prowrestlingtees.com/Sam Roberts and get yourself a subscription to SiriusXM so you can listen this Friday to Sam Roberts' show. It's on Opie Radio Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern. I will be in Philadelphia at the Tower Theater interviewing, having the superstars of NXT on my show. You only one place to hear it live, and that's on SiriusXM. So definitely do that if you're a fan of NXT. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're not a fan of NXT, I don't know what you're listening to. Seriously, like you're wasting your time with this podcast. Or you're missing out, but you might be wasting your time. Don't hit the unsubscribe. Just don't listen. Let the computer download the podcast automatically. I don't need you to listen. Just keep downloading. You know what I mean? That's all it's counted on. Thank you. Thank you for being part of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. And I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. Follow at Not Sam on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And subscribe for free to listen every week to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast.